Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their outstanding yearly summer writers conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, if there is one instinct I have learned to trust that in myself, it is the instinct which tells me which people I should get to know. And when I first met or saw today's guest, Jana Corse-Essery, she was getting ready to teach a class in pitching to agents at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, and I thought to myself, I should get to know her. I didn't know why, but that was what I thought. But I didn't have time to because she was too busy getting ready to teach her course. And so the next time I saw her, she was again getting ready to teach a class and pitching to agents at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. And again, I thought, I think I should get to know her. But again, she was too busy getting ready to teach for me to talk to her. But the third time I met her, as if from a movie, she was not busy. We were at a party at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference, and we got to chatting. And we had a fabulous conversation about memoirs and about marriage and life and everything in between. And I thought, I've got to get her on my show. And you know what? I did. She's with me now, so let's get her on the show. Jana, welcome to Author to Author.
Thanks, Bill. That is a great little story. It kind of reminds me of my the way I met my husband, three times a charm.
Well, you know, speaking of which, what excellent timing. For our listeners who don't know, you are the author of a memoir called The Motion of the Ocean, which was about, well, your relationship with your husband and a particularly long and faithful and interesting boat trip you took together.
Yes. Yeah. It's about sailing across the Pacific on my honeymoon. And, you know, people thought we were kind of crazy. They told us if our marriage could survive that, it could survive anything. And so far, so good.
Yeah, well, actually, that reminds me, I think it was Clint Eastwood who said, if you want to know, paraphrasing, if your marriage can survive, drive across country together. So you did something,
yes.
You went even one step further.
Yes, actually, crossing the Pacific is like driving across country, but going 5 miles per hour the whole way.
Well, and not only that, but here's the thing. If you drive across country, you can stop the car, say, honey, you go to the restaurant, I'm going to go take a walk down the road. And
right,
then I'll meet
right.
you. But you can't, on a boat, you can, there's, you know, what, 30 feet separating you at any given time.
That's right. Although we did stop a lot at, you know, different islands and many countries. So,
yeah.
You know, we could get away every now and then. But, yes, on the long passages, you know, you were stuck. That was it.
But this was a big, obviously this was a big moment for you in your life. This is where you, you know, you decided. Had you married at that point?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
But this is what really brought it together, because I know you guys had been back and forth a little bit before then.
Mm-hmm.
But this event also really began your professional writing career, didn't it?
It did. I knew I wanted to write. I was an English teacher, and so going into the trip, I thought, okay, I'm going to start writing the next great American novel. And then I got on board and I have like 129 versions of my first paragraph.
Oh, God.
Because I realized I had no idea how to write a novel. So ended up, you know, doing the old write what you know thing and wrote for magazines and sailing magazines. And then that ended up kind of ending up turning into a memoir. So.
And so you were writing for the sailing magazines after you had taken the journey? Or before you
no,
would take
No, during. Journey? Yeah, during the journey. So it was, I would send them articles from the middle of the Pacific, and the way to do that, you use an old-fashioned, what seems like an old-fashioned now, modem on a single sideband radio, and so it's going, yeah, I mean, you know, sending emails, you know, across the wave, so to speak. And so that was how I got my first bylines.
Excellent. But then you wrote the memoir, and you know, so this is something I've done and I'm doing, and I know that it's such an interesting journey writing about your own life in that fashion, because this is something you and I had talked about when we were talking at the PNWA, their conference.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the first person, well, you were one of the first people I've heard refer to it this way, and I think it's so important for people who want to approach memoir in this way is to see it as a work of art.
Yes.
Really. Maybe talk about that, because I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, part of the reason for that is just basic logistics. There are so many things that happen in a day, let alone a week, let alone, you know, this covers 2 years, my book covers, that it is a piece of art because you have to choose a theme. You have to say, what am I going to leave in and what am I going to save for some other project? Because
right.
you can't include everything. But then even beyond that, I think that there's a realization that people are going to bring to your book, to your life experience, whatever they bring, and you've got to give them the best story you can give them. Of course, it's all got to be true, but you've got to pick and choose what you include so that they really get your experience, and then let them, you know, have it and do something with it, think about it, act on it, you know.
Yeah, you have to leave room for them.
Yes, yes.
And you have to, you know, you have to decide, you know, whether you can spell it out or not, but you have to decide, what is this about? Why am I telling
right.
this?
Right.
Why am I telling it? You know, what of value was learned? How did things change for me? And how do I show that? Because that's all that matters, really, is how did life reveal itself to me through this experience?
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, you talk about when you're writing a novel, you talk about, you know, a character arc. How does that
right.
character, where are they now? What inciting incident makes them change? You know, what is their quest? What are they working toward? And then how do they change not just in the things they do, but how do they change inside themselves? You know, what fear do they have to let go of? Or
right.
what, you know, what transformation has to happen emotionally for them to be able to reach their quest? And that's the exact same thing that happens to us in our lives. And I think that that's why we cling to characters who have those story arcs, because that's what gives meaning to our lives.
And
when
because
we, are able
we want
to
change.
Yes.
Because we want to let go of fear. We want to evolve,
mm-hmm.
and we so want to see it.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
we know it's possible, whether we
yes.
don't, whether we're experiencing it at this moment in our lives or not, we know it's possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting, like when you think about your memories, how certain things stick out to you, like a conversation with a teacher or a parent, and how you'll remember like that one moment as so pivotal. And then you'll go back and tell the parent or tell the teacher, and they won't even remember it. But what it
That's
is,
right.
is it's how we take the events of our lives and we form them into a story, essentially. I mean, we're telling stories about our lives, and we say, that was the incident. That is the moment that I knew that I, you know, wanted to be a writer or become
right.
an airline pilot or whatever.
Right. You know, funny story, my wife, when she was in elementary school, had this very traumatic event happen that was in part a response to her relationship with this teacher. I think she was
mm-hmm.
a general. My wife was, I think, in third grade. She was 8 years old at that time. And she saw this teacher as one of the most frightening disciplinarians she had yet encountered in her short life.
Uh-huh.
And although Jen's wise enough not to blame her for what happened, but she knew that it was, you know, her fear of this woman is
mm-hmm.
what was in part responsible for this. And so she, in her mind, this woman always stood as a kind of ogre, you know, in
mm-hmm.
her memory. And one
mm-hmm.
day, when she's like 13 or 14, years late, a couple years, you know, but enough time has passed. She's standing in line with this other girl she knew, and the girl opens her wallet, or her wallet, and in it is a picture, and it's a picture of that teacher, who mm-hmm. this girl so adored, to that day she carried a picture of her with her.
Uh-huh.
Now, I have never, I have memories of teacher. I certainly never carried a picture of one.
Right.
So her experience was so completely opposite of my wife's.
Yes.
That she was going to carry a picture of the woman. She'd been like a saint to her.
Right.
And it was, and for my wife, she was the villain, in a way.
Right.
If she had one, it was her.
Right. So the number one people or question people ask me is, you know, how does my husband feel about my version of our 2-year honeymoon?
Yeah.
And because I actually, I'm not sure I can say this on radio. I think I can. I think it's one of the, anyway, let's say I call him a jerk in the first
okay.
time. And so, you know, all the way through, people are feeling kind of sad for him and nervous about him. And, you know, he, sure, if he told the story, it would be a completely different story. But on the other hand, he was, you know, he had full veto power. And, and he's like, no, you got to leave that in. That's exactly how it is. That's how I feel about you sometimes, you know.
Right. Oh, good. Good, good, good. So he thought so he was all for, he was all for it, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's good. That's good. Because, you know, you have to be honest. I mean, part of the journey of a marriage is the other person is worth the effort, is worth the argument, is worth getting down in the mud with, because ultimately, at least from my relationship with my wife, I know we both have the same vision of what a marriage should be. And if we have lost track of that, we will find our way back, and it's worth the effort.
Right.
It's worth the fight. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have what we call our red wine, red couch sessions. We have a
right.
red couch in our house.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there have been times where I've left maybe a forlorn note expressing frustration, and then I get a note back. You know, my husband's already gone off for work, and he'll write a note back saying, looks like we need some red couch time.
Yeah.
And we sit and we hash it out, and it ain't always pretty, but
yeah.
it's worth the time, yeah.
And isn't it, and just like in a memoir, I found this to be the case with Jen, with my wife, is that you're never really talking about the other person. You're
right.
Really, even if you're complaining about their behavior, at least for me, it's always me in the end. It's always something within me that is insecure. There's always something within me that didn't have the sort of confidence to endure whatever was happening. And often all of it comes back to reflection on me.
Right.
I almost never got anything
yeah.
to do with her, even though I want to blame everything on her, of course,
mm-hmm.
at the height.
Well, and, you know, Graham is a much more skilled sailor than I am, even today. And, you know, a lot of my issues came from just that fear and that, you know, needing knowledge that I didn't have. But, you know, it takes experience to get that knowledge and those skills. And so that it's kind of that limbo time. And I think limbo periods are the toughest periods because you know it's going to get better eventually. You have faith that it'll get better eventually, but that doesn't make the current time any better. I mean, even if you have that faith and you have that knowledge, it still kind of sucks to be where you are.
It can be. Yeah,
yeah.
You do have to wait it out. Hey, now, I know that you, when we spoke this summer, you said you had started a novel now because you finished your memoir,
mm-hmm.
and now you've gone back to fiction. So, A, have you enjoyed the return to fiction? That's the first question I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
I have. You know, I'm back to working on the same novel that, of course, I started.
One.
And now I have 347 versions of the first paragraph.
Oh, good.
But I...
Do you have a second paragraph to go with it yet?
I do, and I have more
good.
To follow that, too, actually. So that's a good thing. But I do enjoy writing fiction. I think the challenge for me, you know, one thing that you and I have talked about before is the idea of, is someone an outliner versus, you know, are they not? And that's been really interesting for me, because with my memoir, I didn't have to outline, because I knew, you know, I knew what I could pick and choose from. It was my life. And so then I would sit down and write and kind of see what came. You know, I had an idea for a chapter or a scene, but I'd kind of see what came. And what's challenging for me with this novel is realizing, oh, I can't just go with that cool idea I had, because, you know, I actually have a fairly complex plot that needs to, it has date constraints and it has, you know, things that hem it in. And so I've actually become quite an outliner, and I'm enjoying it, but it's a different challenge than writing a memoir.
Well, yes, and, you know, you really do kind of have to, I think, how much one outlines from nothing at all, and there are writers, there are novelists, including, by the way, mystery and suspense writers I know who you would think could possibly, but even writers of those kinds of genres, there are writers I know who don't outline one whit. And all the way up to writers I know who write page outlines that are hundreds of pages long. I think that it's so important, you know, what you find, where you land in all that. How much planning do you need and how much don't you need? And I assume that, well, I don't know. I'm trying to read with you. Everybody's energetically a little different in this way. But I would assume that you stray from the outline some once you actually get into the work. Does that happen?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's my favorite thing about writing, actually, is where, you know, you write a sentence and you need some sort of scene tag, and you say she picked up the yellow cup, and then later in the paragraph you realize that, oh, well, wait, yellow actually ties in with this here, and, you know, and then all of a sudden things come to mean something. And I mean, for me, it's those little connections that happen that, you know, make me believe in a writer's muse, where, wow, I could not have chosen a better image to pop in my head that then actually made logical sense for different reasons later, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I wrote many, many novels. I didn't publish many of them, but I wrote a lot of them before I started writing my memoir. And what I found is that the experience of writing the memoir was very similar to the fiction, in that even though I knew, you know, my own life, I had to pick and choose which events to relate, because I couldn't possibly come even close. I didn't want to write that kind of a memoir, a really detailed one. And not only that, but you know, there's so much stuff in your life. It's almost like you're almost starting from nothing, because there's so much to choose from. And I was amazed at how the pieces of the memoir would fit together for me unconsciously, just as fiction, just like what you were describing, how things that I didn't anticipate having meaning would have meaning. And seemed to be drawing, and I know it seems like it's not, because it's not imagination the same way. But of course, memory is imagination. Even if it's your own, you're not there. So you are having to go back into your imagination and recreate it and relive it and refeel it to write it accurately. And I have the same experience, again, still writing essays and memoir, where things I couldn't have planned arise and then are there to help fit it all perfectly together.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny how, I mean, I totally agree with you about how memory is a form of imagination, because things take on a bigger significance. And I remember when the night that Graham and I decided to take this big trip, we happened to be eating down at Anthony's at the pier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could remember it in such vivid detail, and I wrote it, you know, into my book. And I imagine these large doors that, you know, you open up and go in, and I describe all this. And then I took my agent to dinner there, thinking, oh, this will be so great. She can see the place where, you know, we had this inspiration. And we walk up to the doors, and they are not large doors. They are just regular-sized doors.
Yeah.
And I cringe thinking, oh gosh, how did I, you know, is this a new building? How did I get this so wrong? But it was just that in my memory, they were these huge grand doors, and you know, and so, ah man, I mean, talk about imagination meeting memory.
Yeah, and I've given up on the truth in the journalistic sense.
Yes.
It's not that I want to be dishonest. I absolutely want just the opposite. But I've given up. I mean, for instance, I'm back rewriting the one memoir I've been doing about my son, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm taking it further back in terms of my own life, and you know, to my childhood, and God knows, you know, I didn't keep a diary or anything.
Right,
But I know I have memories of. I have very clear-ish is what you call it. But the point was never, in a way, I still hold to this, that the point is not what happened. It's what it felt like when it happened. What
mm-hmm.
did I go through emotionally? And I'll try my best to recreate physically what occurred. But, you know, I mean,
well, it's the difference between journalistic truth versus emotional truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, if these large doors illustrate for the reader how big of a moment that was, what a huge inspiration
right.
that place provided, great. Then the emotional truth of my scene has actually come out more clearly than if I'd, you know, been to the letter, gone back, you know, figured out the size and the color of everything, you know.
Right. I agree completely. And, in fact, one of my favorite pieces of nonfiction writing is, and I've mentioned it several times on the show, but is A Movable Feast, which is Hemingway's one piece of sort of memoir. I mean, his stuff always seemed to be plagiarizing his own life quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
But Movable Feast is really his memories of Paris in that time when he was with Fitzgerald and Gertrude Stein and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts it off by saying, if the reader wishes, they can view this as a work of fiction.
Hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting sort of observation on his part, because it wasn't a work of fiction. He was writing about his life. I mean, he wasn't turning himself into a fictional character. He was using all these real people. And yet, I think it was his admittance that he wasn't that interested in recreating exactly what happened. He
right.
wanted to recreate what his experience of Paris had been.
And right.
this was how he was going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, to me, as a reader, it was perfectly satisfying, and I really don't care if Gertrude Stein didn't say that at that point in that time, you know.
Right.
It recreated a certain experience that was interesting and valuable to me. And I feel that the memoirs, I mean, unless you really want to write a detailed autobiography of your life, or if, for instance, you are a celebrity
mm-hmm.
And you want to say, I know you people are interested in me, and so here's what happened, but
mm-hmm.
you're not a celebrity.
Right.
I'm not a celebrity. The only reason people are going to want to read your book is because the story, not because of you. No one knows you. You're nobody in
mm-hmm.
that sense, you know, but,
right.
but you have a story to tell. And
right.
how can it be of value to them?
Right.
The same thing a novelist has to do, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. What do they say? Autobiography, or is the story of one's life, whereas a memoir is a story from one's life?
Oh, I like that. I've never heard that distinction.
Yeah, and I did not make that up.
Well, that's a good one. I have a longer version. It's not nearly as pithy as that, and I'm now going to use that. But I always say, it's not about me, by which I mean it is not about someone who could walk by my gravestone and go, oh, Bill Knauer, he had a son who did this, and he married. It's got nothing to do with
mm-hmm.
that. It's I'm using me. I'm
right.
using my life to tell a story.
Right.
And hopefully it's not about me and my victories and my losses and so on. And don't you think also with memoir, I think this is interesting, this is not true of fiction, but with memoir you really can't have villains.
Hmm.
Not really. Have you ever read a memoir with a real villain? I can't think of one. Of course, I haven't read a ton of them, but...
Well, if you want any of your friends to remain your friends, I suppose you can't have any villains.
That's true. That's very true.
But, you know, I think it's interesting because lots of people come up to me and ask, you know, what did you do about, well, I mean, my husband, they fear that he doesn't like the book,
right.
where actually he does. But, you know, lots of people are writing about their families and they're worried about revealing, you know, it could be deep, dark secrets, or it could just be like, you know, your mom feeling kind of bad for how you portrayed her.
Right.
And so I think that that's true, that there can't be villains, but I also think that when you are just beginning writing, you have to write whatever has to come out. And if that means that your mom looks like a villain,
absolutely.
You know, you got
to
get it
out there. I didn't mean to say that you aren't allowed to because you might hurt people. I felt that it's that in real, ultimately, life doesn't actually have villains in fiction. They are. It's not that for fiction you can have a villain and it can work in a metaphorical way, but in actual memoir, there isn't that villainous character usually doesn't appear. I don't think. I can't think of one where one does. You certainly have people that are challenging to you that, you know, present you, probably your husband, you know, certainly. But he isn't a villain.
No.
He's not wrong.
Right. Well, and I think that part of it is that we're trying to, because they are not characters, although in some ways I do think we need to treat our memoir ourselves, actually, our protagonist is ourselves as a character. But I think that we're trying to get to one's humanity, and so having a cardboard character villain doesn't really get into the nuance of what life is really like. I don't know.
When you wrote yours, did you feel? You know, I always felt like I knew I had grown. From A to, you know, from where I began to where it ended. But I felt like in writing it, I really learned how that had happened. Like I discovered it really in the writing of it. Did that occur to you also?
Yes, absolutely. Because for me, I was writing like a couple years, you know, in the aftermath of it. You know, I wrote a lot during it, but I didn't know I was going to write the book on the trip.
Right.
And so a lot of it was, you know, my husband and I went through some rocky times, and I almost feel like I certainly feel I was able to write better about that time, having the distance and the perspective, and frankly, knowing that we were in a really solid, safe place, whereas, you know, during the trip, you know, we had our issues. And so... So I was able to see more clearly, this is what was going on for him, you know, at that moment, or for me, that I wouldn't have been able to see in the moment.
Yeah, and I think it's really, it's one of the things an author can bring to the story is that their sort of God's eye perspective, so to speak, on the bigger truth. And so you can allow, it's easier if, as a writer, to allow your characters, even if that character is you and your husband, to suffer what they will suffer in the story, knowing that it will be okay, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you don't have to get, so that even as you present the drama, you as the writer don't have to get caught up in the tangled business of the drama. You can have a little perspective, which your readers really want ultimately.
Right. It gives them some breathing room, and it also makes them feel like you're being fair, you're being even-handed to a certain extent, I think. I don't know. I think it's a little bit about trust and that, like, okay, I can stick this one out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jana, as always, these chats go too fast. I can hear a little British woman in my ear telling me our time is done. Jana, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Good luck with the novel. I'm sure it'll be great.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay. Have a good day.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Well, and listeners, have a good day to you. Remember, you got to write it true. You got to write it from your heart and then just see what happens. There's nothing else we can do. Be sure to tune in next week. I'll be back with yet another guest, another show, same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, write what you love. You really can't go wrong.